And I first want to thank Kevin for asking me to do this. It's a privilege and an honor to be asked to do anything for AA today. But one of the neatest things that's happened to me as I began preparing for this was that I really had to get into thinking about the steps, praying about the steps, and asking for guidance about these steps. So thank you very much for the opportunity to enrich my program, and hopefully I will enrich yours a little bit, maybe. I don't know. What I chose to do with this is I'm going to use as Bill sees it, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about that. I'll be referencing some pages in it. When I was first sober, they started a meeting on Wednesday night in Edinburgh, called As Bill Sees It. And we used to read a passage from that book. I don't know if they still do or not. I haven't been to that meeting in a long time. And then we discuss it. And I fell in love with this book very, very early on in my sobriety. So, okay, a few essentials I probably ought to get out of the way. I'm probably the youngest old-timer, not chronologically, but as far as the speakers of this is gone, my sobriety date is September 18th, 1986. So if I stay sober today, I'll have one more day of sobriety. And if I make it a couple more weeks, I'll celebrate 32 years. I don't know how I got 32 years older. I do have a home group. It's the Tuesday Night Cranesville group. Meets over on Crane Road, out in the middle of nowhere. It's only a few miles from my house. The reason it's my home group is it's a 7:30 meeting, and I don't like 7 o'clock meeting. Oh, get it right, woman. It's a 7 o'clock meeting. And I don't like late meetings anymore that I have gotten older. So, and I have a sponsor. And unfortunately, my sponsor's health has not been good. She is not active in the program anymore. But boy, she's got all the wisdom that all the years. She will celebrate 40 years this October. So, and this is my custom every morning and every evening, I say prayers about each and every step. And I'm going to start this with my first step prayer. You might be familiar at least with the first half of it. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as he did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Okay. Well, I'll hit on some of my, a little bit of my drinking later, but I remember my first meeting. And I remember something they said. They said, try us for 30 days, and if you don't like us, we'll refund all your misery. And you know, that kept me coming back, because I was one miserable human being when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the other thing that impressed me at my first meeting were the clear eyes that you had. You know, your eyes look a lot different than when we were sitting in those bars drinking. Your eyes are so wonderful. And those two things really impressed me. I remember nothing else about my first meeting, but I do remember that that was told to me and that your eyes were clear. I read those steps, and they made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. I thought, what? I don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, I have heard this from the podium before, and this has convinced me that I am educated well beyond my intelligence, because I couldn't make heads nor tails, and I've got an education. I might as well tell you, I was a teacher, you know, for 31 years. And it was much easier standing up here and talking about the Pythagorean theorem than it is about these steps, but that's okay. But they made no sense to me. And if they're making no sense to you today, it's okay. Just keep coming back. They're going to make a lot of sense, I believe. Today, I try to live the steps. But first, I had to work the steps. And one thing that was taught to me early on was, when I don't quite understand the concept there, I better go to the dictionary and look up these words. So I looked up working. Work is defined as actively involving mental or physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose or result. So working the steps makes a lot of sense. Sometimes it's mental effort, other times it's physical effort to achieve the purpose or a result. Live is defined as spending one's life in a particular way or under particular circumstances. And today, to the best of my ability, I am attempting to live these steps. They're not something that I actually work anymore. I've tried my best to integrate them into my day-to-day life. So, why do I take the steps? Well, if you'd asked me that when I was new in here, I would say, quit drinking. Well, that's good. That's part of it. Then the next thing would be to recover from my alcoholism when I got a little healthier, you know. It wasn't just about quitting drinking. It was about recovering from this disease. But if we look ahead to that 12th step, that tells us why we are working these steps. In the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That's why I'm working them. And my thoughts may be disconnected. This sounded better on paper or on the. I am so trusting in technology. I not only brought my iPad with my notes, but I printed out a hard copy just in case. But the nice thing about the hard copy is the print's much bigger than it is in the iPad, which helps me. So, not too long ago, I had pulled out a CD that I had. I don't know where, it might have been Tom's, I don't know, but I hadn't listened to it ever. So I put it in, and it's from, I figured this out, I was 15 months old when Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson were speaking on this particular CD, which probably was recorded as a reel-to-reel at that time. And they were at a meeting done in Washington, D.C., a big meeting, anyhow, and Bill Wilson was talking about the third member of AA, turned out his name was Bill also. They called the hospital looking for someone, and the nurse informed them they had a candidate, and they went in, and one of the things that Bill said to AA member number 3, we believe that God could expel the compulsion when we are ready enough, willing enough, and humble enough. And I really like that. You know, we really, when you hear it in the vernacular, it's ready, willing, and able, and not for AA. It's ready, willing, and humble. And I never, we'll talk more about humility later on when we get into step 7, but I thought that was a really neat introduction. So I'm going to go to page 283 in, I marked them if I can find it, 283, there it is. This is Lois hearing from Dr. Silkworth his opinion of Bill Wilson. 283. I had gone steadily downhill, and on that day in 1934, there's a problem with that. It goes black if you don't use it for a while. I had gone steadily downhill, and on that day in 1934, I lay upstairs in the hospital, knowing for the first time that I was utterly hopeless. Lois was downstairs, and Dr. Silverworth was trying in his gentle way to tell her what was wrong with me and that I was hopeless. "But Bill has tremendous amount of willpower," she said. "He has tried desperately to get well. We have tried everything. Doctor, why can't he stop?" He explained that my drinking, once a habit, had become an obsession, a true insanity that condemned me to drink against my will. And that was from AA Comes of Age, and a little later a letter that Bill had written. "In the late stages of our drinking, the will to resist has fled. Yet when we admit complete defeat, and when we become entirely ready to try AA principles, our obsession leaves us and we enter a new dimension, freedom under God as we understand Him." The principles, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. You know, we talk about, when we get to the 12 cents, practice these principles in all our affairs. So I did a little research, and I suppose it really depends on where you're looking, because the principle I find behind step one is surrender, acceptance. And then when I finally located my older copy of As Bill Sees It, honesty is listed as the principle for step one. So they're all good principles, but that's what we're going to... Surrender, acceptance, and honesty are the principles behind step one. And I'm sure if I continued looking, I'd find more of them. So, can you imagine that Lois hearing that news from Dr. Silverworth? He is hopeless. There's nothing we can do for him. So then we go to page two. And this is, again, from AA Comes of Age, where Bill has his spiritual experience and he writes about it. "My depression deepened unbearably, and finally it seemed to me as though I were at the very bottom of the pit. For the moment, the last vestige of my proud obstinacy was crushed. All at once, I find myself crying out, 'If there is a God, let him show himself. I am ready to do anything, anything.' Suddenly, the room lit up with a great white light. It seemed in my mind's eye that I was on a mountain and that a wind, not of air, but of spirit, was blowing. And then it burst upon me that I was a free man. Slowly, the ecstasy subsided. I lay on the bed. But now, for a time, I was in another world, a new world of consciousness. All about me and through me, there was a wonderful feeling of presence. And I thought to myself, 'So this is the God of the preachers.'" Well, you know, not too many of us have that type of spiritual experience. I want one. I don't know about you, but I wanted one real bad. I thought, that sounds really, really cool. And again, back to that dictionary, looking up. Spiritual experience leaves a person with a new and profound sense of awareness or understanding regarding God or truth. Spiritual awakening, that's what I had, I hope, is a realization or inspiration about a connection with an entity beyond the immediate, ordinary physical world of God or other intangible sacred spirit. You know, so the idea of the profound, the suddenness of a spiritual experience as opposed to a spiritual awakening. And of course, I believe that Bill wrote these steps and said at the end, step 12, whatever it says, I now have those up here too. What's step 12? How does it start again? Having had a spiritual awakening, yes. So I believe that, Bill wanted all of us who came into this program to have that spiritual awakening, even if we didn't have that profound spiritual experience. Okay, page 217, and as Bill sees it, if I can find it, there it is. Oh, it's a letter to Dr. Young from Bill, and it was printed in the Grapevine. Most conversion experiences, whatever their variety, do have a common denominator of ego collapse at depth. The individual faces an impossible dilemma. In my case, the dilemma had been created by my compulsive drinking and the deep feeling of hopelessness that had been vastly deepened by my doctor. It was deepened still more by my alcoholic friend when he acquainted me with your verdict of the hopelessness respecting Roland H. In the wake of my spiritual experience, there came a vision of a society of alcoholics. If each sufferer were to carry the news of the scientific hopelessness of alcoholism to each new prospect, he might be able to lay every newcomer wide open to a transforming spiritual experience. This concept proved to be the foundation of such success as AA has since achieved. To me, that's very, very powerful. Powerful words. And then on the same vein, from AA Comes of Age. After failure on my part to dry up any drunks, Dr. Silkworth reminded me of Professor William James' observation that truly transforming spiritual experiences are nearly always founded on calamity and collapse. Stop preaching at them, Dr. Silkworth said, and give them the hard medical facts first. This may soften them up at depth so that they will be willing to do anything to get well. Then they may accept those spiritual ideas of yours, and even a higher power. I just try to imagine what it was like back there in 1934 when this happened to him in 1935, and his working with all these drunks, and they weren't sobering up. But as Lois reminded him, you've stayed sober, Bill. We heard that up at Stepping Stones when we were up there last fall. Page 49 if we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune from alcohol, or to alcohol. And that was my big, big block to taking this first step. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no doubt in my mind that my life was unmanageable. But I did not want it to be alcohol. Alcohol was my solution. Alcohol was my answer. Alcohol was my coping skill. I could not imagine life without alcohol. So I held on to that lurking notion that when my life was just perfect again, when everything was all right, I'd be able to drink without trouble. So, this went on. I was still coming to AA. I wasn't drinking. And then I heard my first sponsor lead. And she talked about that path, that 18 inches from my head to my heart. And the idea, the concept, the belief, the truth that I was powerless over alcohol took about 9 months to go from my head to my heart. So it 18 inches, it moved about 2 inches a month is the way I figured it, you know? At that time, I had a different sponsor, and she never suggested working the steps with me. And I was not smart enough to say, hey, are we going to work these steps or whatever? You know, I was... But I know that this first step was the only step in my early recovery that I really, really took. And that was because I was stubborn. I didn't want it to be alcohol. I wanted it to be the kids, the job, the car, the house, the ex-husband. I wanted it to be anything but alcohol. I could not imagine my life without alcohol. Excuse me, but I had also gotten to the point where I could not imagine going on the way I was. Let's see. We're going. Oh, the second part of that page. Such is the paradox of AA regeneration, strength arising out of complete defeat and weakness, the loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one. So, of course, I had to go to the dictionary and look up paradox again to make sure that I understood it. And a paradox is a seemingly absurd or self-contradictory statement that, when investigated, may prove to be well-founded. And I know that for myself. When I finally surrendered and said, I am powerless over alcohol, I didn't need the title of heavy drinker, problem drinker. Heavy problem drinker. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. But it was a long journey to get to that point. Then he talks about, we know that a newcomer has to hit bottom. Otherwise, not much can happen. Because we are drunks who understand him, we can use at depth the nutcracker of the obsession plus the allergy as a tool of such power that it can shatter his ego. Only thus can he be convinced that his own unaided resources, he has little or no chance. And again, ego, defined as a person's sense of self-esteem or self-importance. Now, the self-esteem, I think it was the self-importance on my part, you know. Yeah, I can't be an alcoholic after all. I have a house, I have my kids, I have a job, and I have a car, such as it may be. Those of you who were around back in those days, that 76 Oldsmobile was a drunk mobile, is what it was. I had booze, bruises all over it. And when I got sober, I couldn't afford anything else. And you know, it was a big old boat, that 76 Delta Royale is what it was. And we went to a lot of meetings. It takes 6 people to a meeting, easily. So, anyhow, where was I? Hitting bottom. Each of our bottoms is probably a little bit different. My actual bottom came in just that last week of my drinking. And I'll share a little bit about that with you. How honest do I be? Oh, I'm honest. Believe it or not, once in a while I would pick up a stranger and take him home for not moral reasons. And because I had been doing this for a little while, I knew that come morning they hit the road. Well, that last week of drinking, one I took home didn't hit the road. And I'm like, really, what is going on here? And stayed around all weekend long. hit the road finally on Monday morning. We had agreed that we were going to meet at a bar that night after he was done with work. It was summertime. I wasn't working. And he didn't show up at that bar that night. I was mad. Spent the whole night. Yeah. Well, the next day, I get the Meadville paper, and back in those days, they had the police blotter in the Meadville paper. And he had been arrested that day. He obviously had beaten up his wife. But for the grace of God. So that was the first thing that happened that week. Next thing, that was on a Monday. Thursday I went out drinking. I had been drinking in between, but Thursday I went out on the drunk. A good one that started in the afternoon, hit three bars, all of which have since burnt. One of them's still standing, but it did have a fire. By this time of my drinking, I didn't know it was a blackout, but I liked to black out. I didn't want to know what was going on around me. I just liked to drink till oblivion. I could forget everything. Well, this particular night, no matter how much I drank, I was still aware of where I was, who I was, and who was around me. And I was mad. And when I woke up the next morning, I was mad again. Mad enough to say, I guess my form of a prayer was, God, I think I'm an alcoholic. And I made a phone call, and I went to a meeting that night. So each one of us has a story of where we hit bottom. And that's my story of hitting bottom. I just couldn't stand myself anymore. So, where am I? Yep, utter defeat, last week of drinking. Oh, yeah. Page 135 addresses that, too, in As Bill Sees It. And through utter defeat, we are able to take our first step towards liberation and strength. Our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turned out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. And that was absolutely my utter defeat that week. I am so grateful for that. And then one more on this, and then I will be done with that. It's page 168, talking about spiritual experience again. 168. I marked these so I wouldn't have this trouble up here. So it is necessary for all of us to accept whatever positive gifts we receive with deep humility, always bearing in mind that our negative attitudes were first necessary as a mean of reducing us to such a state that we would be ready for a gift of positive ones via the conversion experience. Your own alcoholism and the immense deflation which finally resulted are indeed the foundation upon which your spiritual experience rests. It's telling me that I had to hit that bottom. I had to become totally and absolutely disgusted with myself and the way I was living before I could allow anything to come into it. And even after I did, I held on, like I said, for about 9 months. It took me to take this first step. Today I'm grateful for that because in spite of my, you'll hear how bad I took the next 11 steps and first time through if you come back again. But because I had actually taken that first step and really believed it in my heart, I have been able to stay sober. Thank you.
Now we have the question and answer part. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah, I'm going this way. Come on now. We have to have a question.
Oh, thanks, Jim. see if I can answer.
Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
You think it's harder for a woman in AA? Coming in as a drunk?
As never have been a man, I don't really know.
You didn't answer my question.
Well, I the honest answer is I have no idea. Now that you've brought this up, I know what kept me coming back to meetings at first. It wasn't sobriety. It wasn't learning what you had to teach me. I was a bar drinker. And I sort of had gained a reputation out there in those bars. And I had pretty much used up all those guys out there in those bars. And I came into AA, and here was a whole new picking grounds for me. Yes! And pick I did.
Oh, now the truth comes out.
Well, is it harder for a man? I do not know. I cannot tell you that. Or harder for a woman. By 86, there were enough women around, and there were beautiful women who taught me, you know, that from their stories, I could see that they had once acted the way I did, and now they look like classy ladies, and so there was hope. But I don't know why you guys do it, you know? I still haven't figured you out. Raised two sons, have several ex-husbands, and haven't figured you out yet, so thanks.
Helen, thanks an awful lot for the first step. Excellent. You think somebody can get sober if they don't surrender to the first step?
Well, my question is, why would they want to? I believe it. I believe that the first step is absolutely essential, and that you read it. Where all did we read it? It's the only step that we have to take 100% and believe all the time. And I can't imagine why I would want to do all this work if I didn't take that first step. I really can't. I believe it's essential. Okay.
My question is about humility. My question is whether you think that a sponsor can help a person find that humility. I've struggled with people that, you know, came in, they seem like their ego was deflated and turn around and all of a sudden it's all good and they're running things again. And is there really any way that a sponsor can help a person find that key element, and do you believe that humility is a key element of sobriety?
Okay, what came to mind, Kathy, in answer to your question was a speaker that I heard many years ago down at Cook's Force, and she might have been from the other fellowship, you know, Al-Anon. She was having a lot of trouble with the higher power. Not so much humility, but I think the same answer applies. Her sponsor told her, ask her to name three things more powerful than herself. And, she used things from nature, like the wind, you know, what have you. And I think that can apply to humility, too, that if I would question another woman about what is more powerful than you are. Because, you know, one of the definitions that I like of humility is getting right-sized. And by going through, whether they're elements in nature, other people, what have you, things that are more powerful than I am, might help. I would rather tell you about the Pythagorean theorem if you want to know. This is the part that scares me most, questions and answers.
Anybody else?
Does it work? Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi. So I previously thought that I had hit rock bottom before, and it happened a few times. And this past Monday, I think it was the final time, hopefully. And I was just wondering your advice, because I would struggle with the further I got away from it, the less rock bottom it would feel, and I would, you know, get confident again that I could go out again. So I was wondering how you dealt with, you know, getting further away from that point of pain, to remind yourself that it really was, you know, a time, a signal that you needed to stop. So.
Yeah, the phrase that flashed through my mind as you were speaking was romancing the drink. You know, I love to picture myself as a Southern belle drinking a mint julep with my pinky finger in the air. You know, and I might even have a big hoop skirt. I romance the drink. But what I was taught in the scene that I picked was that summer of 1986, wine coolers were brand new. Oh, I was so glad I didn't quit drinking before wine coolers came in, because I would have really wanted to try those. And I had been out drinking wine coolers along with other stuff, and it was a beautiful, beautiful June or July afternoon, and I got home after having drank quite a few of these. I didn't make it into the house, and I was on the sidewalk in front of my house throwing up wine coolers through my nose. Okay, and they burn like they burn. So when I thought that things weren't so bad, and that wasn't my most degrading or disgusting time out drinking, but that was when I think, oh, well, it wasn't all that bad. I would visualize that scene, and I'd bring it back like I was right there, right, and I could feel the burning in my nose, and that's what I used, because I had a lot of white knuckle sobriety for the first couple of months, and so I had to be careful of romancing the drink and bring up an ugly scene from my drinking history. I hope I've answered your question.
Hi, Helen. Hi, Greg, alcoholic.
Hi, Greg.
I met you on day 5.
Ah,
up
yes.
On Mill Fair Road. Step one's a step, but is it actually a working step, or is it simply acknowledging those two principles of powerless and unmanageable? And if it is a working step, how do you know when you've taken it and it's time to do two? That's my question.
Good question. I believe that I knew that I had taken that first step when it moved into my heart, that I felt it. I felt that I was absolutely powerless over alcohol. And that feeling is still with me today, that if I should leave here and head out to a bar, I have no idea what's going to happen with the rest of my day, my life, anything. You know, what I've been told, that there are actually people who can go into a bar, have two drinks, and go home. You couldn't prove it by me. So that's a step that also I take every day. I take all of them every day. I try to incorporate it in my life. But every morning, and I truly believe that I am powerless over alcohol, and my life, well, it's still unmanageable at times, even without alcohol, but not the kind of unmanageability that I had back then. And for me, I knew it was, I could go on to step two. I knew I had finally admitted complete defeat.
Thank you.
And it was just something that, and I should have, you know, I should have been talking this over with my sponsor, but I didn't have a sponsor who was working the steps with me, and I was muddling through this on my own. And so my second part of that would be talk it over with your sponsor. Talk with your sponsor and say, okay, here's how I'm thinking about it now. Do you think I'm ready to move on? Because that's a sponsor's job. Thanks. Oh, it's going to be a tough one.
No. Thanks, Helen. It was great. And you touched on this a little bit, too, on when we get to that step one, not to have any reservation. I have a couple of girls that I get the impression that there's still reservation that maybe someday, and then what was shared earlier, like what are the tools that they can use or that I can suggest to stay stopped and continue with step one so they can then continue into step two?
Yeah, that's a good one. Unless I have taken this step one and believe in my heart of hearts that I am truly an alcoholic, I'm not going to be willing to do the rest of that work. You know, it's a lot of work. This is a personal belief, and I know that this is differing opinions. I believe that I need to stay on a step as long as I need to stay on a step before I move on. Because it's a very individual thing. And where someone else came in and said, oh, well, I knew I was powerless over alcohol, but I didn't think my life was unmanageable. Well, I was just the opposite. I knew my life was unmanageable, but I didn't think it was alcohol. So, you know, I would rather see the first step, continue to pray about it, continue to talk about it, continue to write about it, till I'm absolutely convinced.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, thank you.
Thank God.
Oh,
you did a good job.